All right, we are back. Holden and I are here together in the studio doing the intro today. This might be the first intro we've done together.
I believe so.
Yeah, usually I'm all by my lonesome.
Oh, by your lonesome. By my lonesome. Late at night.
So this is pretty cool. We just finished recording another episode that'll release next week, but we are recording this about some double Spurs.
Yeah, two Spurs on each leg.
Two sides.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
There was a guy that got that shot a double spurred bird on both sides in South Georgia. In a blueberry farm. I was reading it in the Georgia Outdoor News. It was an article that they published. And I think I sent you the link and you're like, ooh, how do we talk to this dude? And it got really cool because it's his first ever turkey and he couldn't get on this bird.
It took him like a couple years to kill this bird.
Yeah. Called a family friend to come out and he talked sweet nothings in his ear. Got him to come in, busted this bird. Didn't know how rare it was.
Yeah. And
come to find out there's less than two dozen ever reported in the U.S.
Wild. And yeah. In our home state. In even
home
crazier.
State. Well, not my home
not
state.
Not home state.
Where my home is.
Where we reside.
Yes, where we reside. So it was pretty cool. I think Lanier was – so the gentleman's name was Grant Tucker. Who killed the bird. 19-year-old kid, mm-hmm. South Georgia, going to electrical school. And Lanier is his girlfriend's uncle?
I believe so.
Uncle-in-law, maybe?
Yeah.
And he's a turkey killer. He's, you know, for years and years, he did a double slam every year, you know, go around all the country. He seems like he knows how to hunt turkeys.
Oh, yeah. He knows how to talk to them.
So he dropped some pointers and some tips and some different things along the way, too. But I think it was just cool, especially because it's his first bird. Lanier did say, hey, by the way, you are getting a full body mount. You don't have a choice. You do not have a choice, which I definitely agree with that. So.
Love to find myself in that predicament. Oh, I have to get a full body mount. Shoot.
Yeah, right. At this point, if I get a Jake, I might have to full body mount it. It's been a rough year for us. So as we're recording this, it is when this releases, it'll be the morning after Alabama season closes.
That's right.
And we have a bunch of tag soup. That's all we have. And Georgia's got like a week left, and I'm not sure.
I don't know if
the odds are in our favor. Yeah.
I don't even know if I'm going to get another chance to go out.
And hopefully I'll get a chance to go up to Michigan, hunt with Minkus and my brother a little bit later in the month. But that's still kind of a... you know, up for debate if you're going with me, I guess, or not.
Yeah, I'm trying to make it work. There's a lot of moving pieces.
A lot of stuff going on. But we are in the full swing of things, right? Treason just got back from a show in Florida,
mm-hmm.
and the Zen gear is what I've been probably rocking the most. I actually wore it today as I met up with Barry from Forget Genetics.
Nice.
And look, whether it's boat, beach, summertime shenanigans, I'm going to be rocking a lot of Zen.
Okay.
UPF 50 plus, protect the skin, look cool, breathable. It's pretty awesome stuff. And the same hoodie that you can get with the UPF 50 is the Ultra Light Shade Tech Early Season, which is the newest item on the website. I think it's still the newest item. And I love it. And you have not ordered yours.
I have not ordered mine yet, but it's in my cart.
Yeah, you need to get on that train. So. We still do have some hats available, some in-season hats, Richardson 112s, hand-stitched leather patch made right here in Georgia. A couple different colors still. We are sold out of the green on green, but we still have the khaki coffee and the black and green.
Multiple colors. Yeah, match any outfit.
Multiple colors coming. Gosh, what else do we got going on? There's a few cool things that we have still. We have... the Treason Summer Bash is scheduled, so the 3D shoot's going to be up in Kentucky in August. We'll get the dates. We'll release the dates and then probably the next podcast intro. We got a Treason Pheasant Hunt.
South Dakota
with Nick from SD Hunt. We did a podcast with him. So, and there's spots open on that trip. It's going to be the first annual pheasant hunt out in South Dakota. So I'll be there. Mike Austin will be there. I think you're coming.
Mm-hmm.
I think we got Joe Willis locked in. So if you want to go shoot some predators at night and hunt some pheasants in the pheasant capital of the world.
That's a pretty cool name. Like I wouldn't mind that title.
Pheasant capital of the world, right? I've been there before. Lodge is great. Nick's great. The dogs are awesome to watch work. So there's a few spots left on that hunt. So if you're interested, let us know and we'll get you in on that. And then I think there was a couple spots that just opened up
for Africa.
August Africa trip. I don't know if a few people backed out or what happened, but if anyone's been wondering, wants to go to Africa.
If you can go, you need to go.
Yeah, give us a call. At least let us talk you into it.
Mm-hmm. We'll peer pressure. Whatever peer pressure you need, we'll give it to you. So just give us a shout.
For sure, for sure. So it's there's a lot of cool stuff going on. There's a few more shows coming up too. So Treason is going to be in Birmingham in July at the World Deer Expo. So Holden and I will both be there recording podcasts with them. So a few key dates here. We'll just kind of run through those again. The first one coming up is that World Deer Expo in July. We have the Summer Bash, that 3D archery shoot and a long shot contest, which is going to be in Kentucky. I think that's in August, just before all the deer season start to open up. And then we got the Pheasant Hunt in South Dakota, which I think is October 28th to the 30th. And there's spots available there. And then we just had, we will not be there, but the Treason annual trip with Hunt Tech's got a couple spots that are still open for the hunt in South Africa, which is in August.
That's what we were on last year.
Yeah. That's how we all got connected.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
So go.
I can't wait to get those mounts back.
Yes. I'm still waiting. I guess we're all still waiting, but I'm excited.
Every time we sit in the studio, I'm wondering where I'm going to put different mounts and what wall I'm going to put a kudu on based on how tall it is. We're going to have to figure that out. Anything else going on for you in the rest of turkey season? You got a week left in Georgia.
Turkey season. It's been a tough one. That's about all I have to say about that one.
It's tougher than your deer season was, which was pretty tough.
Yeah, this hunting season has really put me through the gauntlet.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for next year season.
We got a few months left for that. Although I've been shooting the bow quite a bit this week. So, but look, for anybody that isn't already, make sure you subscribe on Apple or Spotify. It does. It gives you an alert every time a new podcast drops, which is typically every single Thursday. Follow us on social media. And if you're feeling generous, share the podcast with a friend. We appreciate it. And again, thanks for supporting Treason and the in-season podcast. We have episode 38. And we're, double spurred.
Double spurred up on a Tuesday.
And that's a bit of a double meaning because Lanier actually got spurred all four of the spurs. Yeah, so,
that is right.
We got double spurs on both legs and a couple Georgia boys, and it was a fun time, cool story. So look into that. We'll tag the article where it was published from the Georgia Outdoor News as well. And I think he even said it might get published in Turkey and Turkey Hunting when that comes out, that annual magazine.
I think he did mention something about that, so I'll be on the lookout for that.
Genetic mutations are cool.
They are.
Sometimes. Sometimes they're really
depends in the scenario.
So, anyways, we appreciate everybody for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this episode, Double Spurred. Welcome to the In Season Podcast, the hunting podcast that brings back the camaraderie of hunting, the campfire conversations about gear, tactics, hunting stories, big bucks, gobbling turkeys, and whatever else might be in season. Whether you're an avid bow hunter, a small game enthusiast, or trying to plan your next big hunting adventure, we are here for it. So let's go.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the End Season Podcast. Mike and I are here in Kennesaw, but we have two other Georgia boys on the line, Grant Tucker and Lanier McCurdy. How's it going, guys?
Doing good.
How you doing?
Well, you guys have a pretty pretty cool story, but before we kind of get into all that, let's kick it off with how's turkey season been?
It's been great. Can't complain.
I bet you can't.
Yeah.
that's why we got you on the podcast, because you got some cool stories coming up, and Lanier, you were a part of it. But it's interesting. Holden and I. We came across this article. I was probably scrolling when I should have been doing something else, and this article popped up from Georgia Outdoor News, and it was talking about this Southern Georgia dude that had a chance to shoot a turkey with double spurs on both legs, and the rarity of it. And I started reading through, and the story just sounded super cool. The pictures looked awesome. And we were like, okay, we need to send you a message. So I think I sent you a Facebook message or Instagram or something. And we connected that day and talked on the phone, and here we are. But before we get into all the craziness, maybe we let Lanier or Grant, why don't you go first? Because I think this is kind of your story that then Lanier came in and kind of helped you close the deal. But tell us who you are, where you're from, how old you are, what you do, how you got into outdoors, all that stuff.
Well, 19 years old. I'm currently a student at Wiregrass. I'm going for electrical. I started I grew up, my daddy's been deer hunting all my life. I started deer hunting when I was old enough to walk. I've been in deer woods with him. But that's all he did. He strictly just deer hunting. And I went out on my own with some buddies and started duck hunting. And then I got into turkey hunting last year. And I struggled with it. I had a hard time. I had a picture of that bird. I knew it was a good bird. I'll be honest, I didn't know he had double spurs then. I just knew he was a mature bird.
Well, at that point, if you were struggling to get on birds, you were like, hey, it's a turkey. It's a mature turkey, right? It's got a beard. It's got spurs. It's not a Jake. That's good enough to hit the ground at that point.
Right. Yes.
Lanier, what about you? What's your background?
Killing anything that walked. It was legal and illegal. it was just the same old Southern boy, you know, raised deer hunting pretty much. Dad farmed, so that was kind of inducive to our time frame of getting the crops in. We, you know, we done a lot of deer hunting, dove hunting type situations. Never really turkey hunted, actually, till I got in college. Went down to VSU playing a little ball and got away from having to be on the farm, you know, farming. I tell people, you know, I wasn't raised on a farm. I was raised farming. So in the spring, you know, we didn't dad didn't let you go turkey hunting in the spring, you know. But I sort of developed a passion for it there, you know, turkey hunting when I was in college, you know, and it just sort of grew from there, I guess. I still like to hunt about anything, and I like to chase big deer. I got some leases in Kentucky, you know, and but turkey hunting is just something that really strikes a nerve in the spring, you know. But you were talking about like shooting jakes or, you know, that type of thing. One thing, you know, I tell people like, they, you know, Tom, you know, turkey calls bloated up. Well, he didn't have but a 4-inch, I mean, a 6-inch beard, 7-inch beard, 8-inch beard. I tell you, look, man, if that sucker blows up in my face and gobbles at me with a full fan, he's dying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting, right? Because all the research I've done is the real age of the turkey is determined by the spurs, which are so small that usually you can't even tell till it's on the ground. And the beard isn't really indicative of maturity or age. I mean, it looks cool and we talk about it, sure, but it's, I agree with you. I'm a novice, you know, Grant, I'm more in your bucket boat, right? Except I haven't really killed any birds, but I'm the last couple of years is me moving from being more of a whitetail guy into kind of having this passion for turkey hunting and getting my butt kicked and struggling specifically, you know, on these Alabama Easterns that I'm trying to get after here. But I agree with that. I think if it's not a Jake and it's legal, man, it's getting hammered right in the face.
Blowing down.
yeah, mowing down for sure. So how do you guys know each other?
Actually, Grant dates some of my wife's kin folks.
My niece,
you know.
Okay. Is that a good thing?
Oh yeah. We could have done a lot worse. Gonna leave him hang around a little while.
Okay. That's good. Well, gosh, I feel like I don't want to wait. I kind of want to just get into this story here. I guess before we do that, so have you guys hunted together much before?
One time before we harvest that bird.
Okay.
Right. I don't remember.
You're going to have to start doing it a lot more
than the first or second hunt that we went on together.
Okay. So you guys knew each other, you'd interacted, but it really wasn't until this bird that this is probably the coolest hunting experience you guys have together then, if I'd have to take a guess.
Yeah, most definitely. Grant, well, he can tell you about it. I was just long for the ride, really, you know.
Yeah, Grant, let's talk about your first experience with this bird, and because it sounds like it wasn't just a kind of first time you've seen him, one and done type of story here. But walk us through this journey. I'm going to follow along here in the article to fact check you a little bit along the way, or add some pieces that maybe as you had a chance to tell these reporters about. But this has turned into a whole thing, right? You've had a chance to tell this story to multiple different people. There's been a couple articles put out on it, but talk us through this process.
So I started hunting him last year, last turkey season. You know, I put a camera out. I had a few pictures of him and a few pictures of other birds. But he stuck out to me the most, I guess. I don't really know why, but he did. And I tried to go down there and hunt him and get on him. All I could do was talk trash to him. I got my daddy to get up. Like he always says, he'd rather shoot a chicken with a slingshot than go hunt a turkey in the morning.
Okay.
So, I mean, it was hard to get him out of the bed to go get on his turkey with me. I finally got him out of bed. He tried to call a little bit. He couldn't do nothing but talk trash to him. So finally, a few days went by. Lanier actually, he invited me on to go to a hunt with him on one of his leases. So I went, and he did his thing. You know, I kind of watched, and he's always teaching me stuff. There's so much to learn, different stuff about it. It's like he always said, it's the psychology of the bird. He wants to know how the bird's working, what he's doing, where he's going, just everything about him. And there's a lot more than you think than just go sit on a tree and call and talk to him, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So I told him about him. I said, I got a few birds down here. I said, I can't get on them. I can't do nothing with them. He said, we'll go see what we can do about it. So he went with me. I think he picked me up 5:45.
Yeah.
He picked me up about 5:45. We got down there. We got all our gear set up. And we walked down there. And we sat down. We didn't hear a gobble. No. We sat there for a little while. We heard him gobble way off. What, about 200-300 yards in that swamp?
He was probably about 500 or 600 across the bay, a big swamp bay in there.
Okay. What type of habitat is this down there? Because, you know, we're Holden and I are hunting in eastern Alabama, you know, just west of Atlanta. It's just mountainous and steep terrain, yeah. You know, creek systems running through, but largely either a, you know, cut pine where it's growing up real thick or hardwood timber sections. What's the habitat look like down there? You talked about kind of swampy, marshy, but.
Yeah, it's, you know, everything down here is flat. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the nickname for it, the Flatwoods, you know. That particular bird was that I always tell people, like, most time if you're picking out a roost tree down here, if you find what I call those swamp pines, you know, old big pines with, mm-hmm. you know, and so you have a lot of bays with them big swamp pines in it because they cannot harvest, you know, they can't get in there to get them. That particular place there was like you said, it's just real thick. It's growed up pines, probably 10-year-old saplings. So, and there was some two paths in there, you know, some roads. So that in a situation like that, they're going to hit them two paths. They don't want to be in that thick pines. But you'll have some places where pines are 10 or 15 years old and it grows up and undershaded where, you know, where there's some visibility underneath and they'll use that. But where we were, we were on the edge of a blueberry field with a bay all around it. And then they actually pitch down in them thick pines, you know, the sapling pines, I would say, on some two paths.
Okay.
They don't, you know, a situation like that, they usually don't gobble too good when they do hit the dirt, and you know, on a two path. I mean, if they do, they're going to die pretty quick, bobcat or coyote or something, because it is thick in there.
Yeah. So was this bird already with hens in the morning, or kind of how did this all break down, Grant?
Hey, come in. It was actually him and another bird that come in. Did he meet them hens in the field, or was they come out with him?
I didn't see him cross the road. You did. But I would assume they pitched with him. You
yeah.
know? I didn't see. I mean, we would have noticed them pitch in the blueberry field or heard them. But so they, I'm assuming. I can't say for sure, but I'm sure they pitched with them. There were two of them.
Okay.
I seen when they come out to fix stuff. They didn't say a word. Like, we sat there probably 35 minutes. He didn't gobble. Neither one of them gobbled nothing. I think the second time he gobbled, the near called to him, kind of let him know we was there. And he hushed, and we didn't hear nothing until he come out. He got in the blueberries, and he crossed there's a road that goes down beside the blueberries, and he crossed that road. And I seen him and another gobbler, and they come in there. And I was like, he was kind of sitting behind me. So I was like, I told him, there they are. My heart started pumping. It was pounding, man. Like, crazy. I kind of actually thought they went off. Well, we sat there for about another 2 or 3 minutes, and he called to them again. and they just fired up that and the blueberries. I mean, they just, both of them.
And Lanier, what was your calling like? Was there any specific strategy here? Obviously, you know, you're, it sounds like you're trying to talk their love language, and you're talking to them, not talking at them. But what was the strategy? What was the sweet language you were sending their way?
Well, I mean, and when they were roosted, they were gobbling decent. I mean, you know, they gobbled a couple times, and once they gobbled, I knew where they were. They couldn't see us. You know, they didn't have visual on us. So I just sort of, I got up in the road, and you just try to sound like a hen waking up, you know, just light clucks, you know, tree yelp very lightly. Done that just a couple times. Standing up, you know, I walked off on the road there. And then, you know, got a little more aggressive. And I don't know if I'd done a fly down cackle or not, but then, you know, ramped it up a little bit and done like a assembly call once I hit the dirt, you know, just sort of like in my mind, what's a hen going to do in that situation?
Exactly. They don't want to group up after they pitch.
Yeah. And then that situation, I was able to do that because, like I said, they didn't have eyes on us. Like I could. Once they gobbled, I knew they could not see us from where they currently were. And I knew that they were going to pinch in that road, which that was, you know, we didn't have access to that. And Grant, and it's like I told him, you know, I think a lot of turkey hunters mess up between that tree gobble and the first time that the turkey gobbles on the dirt. I told him, I said, these birds are not going to gobble probably coming in. You know, they're not. It's thick in there. They're going to come silent. I said, when they hit this road, they're going to gobble. And that's what they've done, you know, and I didn't call to them again until they gobbled on the road. I mean, they knew where we were. He answered me one time in the tree. I've never seen an animal that can pinpoint your location from 500 or 600 yards. And when I say pinpoint, I'm not talking about, he's in within a.
Oh no, they know what tree you're sitting on.
They know. I've had hens come up just and be looking dead at me from 500 yards. You know, I mean, like, you know, pitch, sail, come in walking and walk dead to me. It's just unreal to me.
It is kind of wild, right? Because you grunted a deer or rattle a deer, and they'll come into the area and they'll be looking around and trying to see if it's behind cover here or there. But a turkey.
No, they know it's exactly like they where know it's the coming
square
from.
Inch that you're in. There's, we were talking about the senses, and I was listening to some boys that we're about to record with in the future, Cartel Custom Calls, and they're all into the kind of the anatomy, and they had this hypothesis that the purpose of the snood, right, and that actually the snood, I think that fatty layer actually runs into their brain. And they were talking about it almost being in another sense that goes into, you know, the kind of the vibration in the depth of where that sound is coming from. I don't know that that's been proven, but it was a really interesting concept and made sense to me when you think about how well they hear, how well they see, and then, you know, this purpose of the snood and how it changes lengths during different times or how excited they are or what they're doing. It's just cool to think about, you know, how from 500 yards away, they know exactly where you're at.
Yeah, and that's what you talk to a lot of people, especially when they're getting started. Everybody's heard the story, bird gobbles in the tree, got quiet, they make a move, or he gobbled on the dirt one time, but they make a move, next time he gobbled, he's where they were, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's one thing I've told Grant, like, I look at it as kind of like chess, you know. When they gobble in the tree, I'll make my call sequence to them. When I know they've heard me, I do not make another call until they're on the dirt, until I know where they're at and what they're doing, you know. Because I think calling's important, but it ain't what kills turkeys. I mean, it helps kill turkeys, but I think you're positioned, where you position yourself, and being a good woodsman, you know, like, mm-hmm. This turkey's going to work this way. What position do I need to be in? He's going to work this oak hammock. He's going to do this. Positioning and patience will kill way more turkeys than y'all was in Nashville, get on the Grand National chain stage, win the championships. But you take an old killer this woodsman and knows, they'll lay them down just as good as anybody.
I forget who the guest was holding, but somebody said you can either call turkeys or you can kill turkeys. But if you just want to call at them to hear them gobble, you're probably not going to kill them. Once they know where you are and you have a sense of where they are, just shut up.
Yeah, exactly. It's so hard though to hold back sometimes when they're just hammering. You just want to call again, have them come. But like you said, it's usually a detriment.
And that's what I told Grant this morning. I said, a lot of people hang them up, call and hang them up. I mean, we're trying to reverse nature, and when you do call, you can hang them up easy. And I hunt a lot here in South Georgia, and we don't really have a lot of vocal hens. I mean, you'll run up on one a year, two or three a year maybe. But when you're hunting 45 days a year during the turkey season, and you only hear two or three really, really vocal hens, I mean, it's just like y'all said. I mean, it's hard to do, but I just try to sound realistic,
Yeah. So let's jump back into this here. So pitch down, go to that two track with the hens. Keep going through this story, Grant.
So like when it come out of the swamp, they never gobbled while they was in that swamp coming through that thick stuff. They come across the road. Well, let's back up a little bit. Before he even came out of that thick stuff, when they told him, he said, "Get ready, get your gun ready, get it out your lap, get ready." Like he knew. So then that's when my heart started like beat. So they come across. I seen them both come across. They got in the blueberries, he called, they fired up, and they were just hammering on them. And we could see them a little bit. Could you see them when I was going in through the blueberry bush?
Well, I was kind of looking over Grant. Last thing I wanted to do was mess it up, so I was sort of looking. I could see them decent, not really.
I just seen them coming in and out of them blueberries, and I got on him, and there was one on the left and one on the right. And I tried to get on the one on the right first, but I couldn't really get on him. I couldn't see him because I was standing between them bushes. So I seen the one on the left turn a little bit. So I was able to get on him, and I could see his head. And when he turned a little bit, Lanier kind of yelped back at him, and he kind of panned back out this way. And I put it on his head right there. I just squeezed. Well, actually, before I squeezed, I told Lanier after I killed him, I said, man, I had to blink. I had to close my eyes. I said, my heart was beating so fast, I couldn't really see. I had to regroup.
We've all been there. We've all been there. That's better than trying to squeeze that trigger and being like, oh, my safety's still on, dang it. And then it messes up. then you get nervous and anxious and you start moving too fast. So how far was this bird?
He's probably 40.
Okay.
About 40
yards. Yeah. And once you shot him, what was it like after that? Did you guys run up on him? Was he, graveyard dead? Like, what was it?
I've tried to teach Grant, when we kill one, we don't just, you don't run up to him, like just because there's been lots of situations before Georgia changed the daily limit where you kill multiple, or if you got somebody else doubling up, He went and jumped out and said, whoa, let's don't blow them out of the country. We might want to come back and hunt this other one,
Because Lanier, did you have a gun or were you already tagged out or what?
I'm from South Georgia. If I go hunting, I got a gun.
Okay.
Dad's a probate judge and he used to ask me all the time, how many turkeys you kill? I was like, Dad, I got one left.
That's a good answer.
Always have one left.
Okay. So you guys, Grant, you shoot this bird. You guys you're high five. You're jacked. You're ready to get up on this bird and grab it, right? So pick the story up there.
So before we went on that hunt, he took me, and we got on a bird, and we was kind of getting a position, and we was walking. And he had his fan up. When you keep going, you quit. So he had his fan up, and since I started hunting with him, he told me one time. He said, "If we're hunting and we're walking, stay behind me. Every time you see some animal, like either this deer, turkey, whatever it is, they walk in a straight line. woodsmanship. So he told me that, and I understood it, so I stuck with it. So I was walking behind him, and birds come out. We walk, we like meet him halfway. Him come across, he shoots one, and he lays down, and he's flapping. He hits.
I started doing fighting purrs, you know.
Yeah.
And we're sitting there, you know, quiet. I was ready, kind of, whatever. He come in there, I seen him. And he said, shoot, shoot, shoot. So I shoot. I shot clear over the top of him. This bird gets away from him. So I'm sick to my stomach. I went and put in another choke, a Jib 685. I put that choke in. I went and bought some Apex ammunition that he told me about. So I'm ready.
Just completely
now, you know?
Switched up everything.
Yeah, because I'm sure it wasn't that you closed your eyes again, right? It was the right. Choke of the ammo.
He told me after he killed that bird, man, I got this Jib choke and this Apex ammo. That won't happen again. I said, Grant, you needed an improved system. The bird was 15 yards. That choke did not have anything to do with you missing that first turkey, man. So when the birds were coming in, I did kept telling him, I said, hey, bear down on him. Bear down on him. Make sure, you know, bear down on him. You know, trying to just downplay the situation before he did make a shot on the other bird.
That's wild. So when you walked up on this bird, walk us through, you know, stats when you first realized it had, you know, these incredible spurs.
So, you know, he's happy as a kid in a candy factory because he put me on the bird. I've been trying to hunt. I'm excited. My heart's beating from my head to my toes. And we walk up there to it, and he looks at the bird and said, man, I ain't believing this shit. You know, I'm like, what the worry? Like, I can't really see the spurs or nothing. I mean, I've seen his beard. It's like, what do I look at every time I kill a bird or something like that? You know, it's like, spurs. Well, by that time, he starts flopping. So he reaches down there and grabs him around the neck. He already knew he had double spurs. Well, he grabs him around the neck and he goes to hand him to me. And when he does, he flaps again. I kind of jump back. Well, in that moment, he gets double spurred right there.
Mark.
He got a
battle scar from that bird. Yeah. So, you know, I'm looking at it and I'm like, dang, this thing's got double spurs. You know, they was good size spurs, but I kind of didn't know what I had at the moment. Honestly.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like I'd be the same way too. Like, it would be like, yeah. I'd be like super cool. It would be awesome because it'd have double spurs, but I don't know if I would know like the gravity of.
Yeah, when did you realize how rare it was? I mean, Linear, did you know right away, like, oh, this is a special bird?
Well, like, when I walked up to the bird, like, he had one leg hanging out, and I looked, and he had double spurs. And that's when I went ahead and just picked him up by the neck, and I told Grant, I said, hey, you're mounting this bird.
I didn't have a choice.
He said, well, I might. I said, hey, I might too. You're mounting this turkey. He said, why? I said, look at his spurs, dude. He said, what is it? I said, he's got two spurs, you know, on each leg. And I was holding him by the head so he wouldn't flop and get his feathers all messed up, you know. And that's when I went and tried to hand him to Grant. I was like, here, you hold your turkey, you know. And I went to hand him off, and he went to flop, and he jumped back like a little girl. And I had to re-grab him, and he swung into me. But what I told Grant, you know, when we were, you know, laid him back out to get pictures, I said, you know, I've walked up on a few turkeys before, and I'm no pro, I'm no professional, but, I've seen a good many turkeys dead. And I said, when I walk up to something and I've never seen it, you know, it's an oddity. But when I recollect the people that I know that are turkey killers, you know, we talk a lot of different people, and I never heard personally of anyone killing a turkey with double spurs. I mean, that's reaching a lot of turkeys then, you know, not just me personally, but I never had a conversation network with somebody that had killed double. I had seen it one time, and I told Grant this in an article or a magazine or somewhere, I had seen it before, you know, but I had personally never talked to someone who had killed double spur turkey like that.
Yeah, it sounds from reading some of the articles that Grant, that you were in, it talks about it being a genetic mutation. Mm-hmm. And there's there's less than like two dozen actually known,
like,
cases.
Reported. Yeah.
Right. It's like 0.01% of the population or something like that. I can't remember right off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's wild. So
yeah,
when
fewer
did,
than two dozen cases are known.
When did it go from you guys being jacked about it to you starting getting calls from different people or talking to others? Because reading the article, it sounds like, you know, you took it to the taxidermist, they'd never seen it. You talked to some biologist, they'd never seen it. How did it get from that bird flopping and spurring Lanier over here to ending up in GON?
Actually, Mr. Gill, I think that Mr. Brad Gill, he's the one that actually sent the picture of the double spurs off to the DNR turkey biologist.
Okay.
He's the editor for GON.
I told Grant, like, I said, look, I'll take you, and but it ain't nobody, you know, like, I don't really, where we hunt and all this, I don't really advertise that, you know, I don't post it on, I don't have social media or anything, so I told him, I said, so don't, you know.
Don't be blowing up the hot spot.
Yeah. So then he called me. He's like, hey, do you mind if I put my turkey on Facebook? I was like, I don't know. I mean, you know, it's your bird. Enjoy the moment, you know. He's legal. I mean, ain't nothing to hide, you know. And I think that's where GON reached out. Must have seen it on his Facebook page, maybe.
Okay. Who else have you talked to about it? So you talked to the, you know, George DNR, you talked to GON, you've talked to, didn't you say there was another magazine that had reached out at one point or another too?
Yeah. Turkey and Hunting.
Yeah, Turkey and Turkey Hunting.
He got a picture of the bird and I guess he's seen it on GON. He told me they only publish their magazine like once a year. He was going to keep it in mind, but they definitely want to see some pictures and hear the story.
Okay. Okay. So that one hasn't published yet.
What did the spurs end up measuring?
We didn't measure them. They were probably inch and an eighth and probably three quarter and then inch and a sixteenth and a half. I mean, the other one probably a half, maybe a little over half.
Okay. And you said it had over a 10-inch beard on it, right?
Yeah, it was like 10 and a quarter.
Yeah. He loves to measure beards, like I'm more like you. Like I'm looking at spurs. I don't care if he's got a 4-inch beard with beard rod. You know, if he's got inch and a half hooks.
that's wild. So now, Grant, now that you know that this is rare, right? How rare this really is? How does that? I mean, it's special because it's your first bird, right? You're never gonna forget that. But no. Man, this feels like, you know, you go out. And your first deer you kill is a booner, right? That's kind of what it feels, or some really crazy, you know, drop tine, or just something really unique that you may never see again. How do you process this now?
Well, it kind of took me a while. I was kind of stunned, you know. I was amazed. I did some research. I read about it, and when the DNR. When they got back with me and told me how rare it was, I don't know, man. I was just extremely excited.
So now, do you want to kill more turkeys, or do you just calling it there?
That's what I told Lanier earlier. I said, you done got me to break the ice. Now we need to go try to do a double slam next year or something.
I love it. I love it. Lanier, where all of you hunted? Are you mostly just staying in Georgia hunting? Are you traveling to kill birds? Like, what's your turkey hunting career look like?
I have here lately just been hunting Georgia. I went up to Kentucky, I think last year. I got a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old, so, and work's gotten busier, but I used to go like kill a double grand slam every year. I'd go down to St. Cloud, Florida and hunt with Mr. John Parton down in St. Cloud. He owns a good bit of land down there at a cattle farm. So we'd go down there and we'd kill a couple of Osceolas, mm-hmm. come back, hunt Georgia. Then we would go Oklahoma or either Texas. And then leave there and go to South Dakota, Nebraska. I got in a rut there for a lot of years, which I love hunting Miriams. You know, you can call to them. You can see them. You know, it's open, and it's just different hunting, and it's fun. But I got in a rut of hunting with the same people year after year. I'm wanting to get started back doing a lot more traveling hunting. But I'd like to go hunt different states, you know, really, just see something different.
Yeah.
But my boys play ball, basketball, football, baseball. So it's just it's harder to get gone now than it didn't seem like it used to be 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, I feel that. I feel that. Holden Holden just got engaged and doesn't have the kids yet, but yeah. It is. I have two young girls, similar to the age of your kids, right? My girls are 7 and 9, and it seems like there's always something going on. And, you know, when you travel a bit for work and you come home, it's hard to even get away. We're trying to get away this Saturday to get back out there.
Yeah.
And I got some property in Alabama that's like an hour and 15 minutes from where we live. So we're trying to get back out there this Saturday.
They gave me the slip last weekend. I don't know what happened, but
you haven't told this story on the podcast yet. Maybe Lanier can give you some tips.
Yeah, I know, because I need them, because they did not come in. That was for sure. We have a place in North Georgia, and we can deer hunt 22 of the acres, and then but during turkey season, we have permission to hunt the adjacent or adjoining 44, so it makes it 66. But there's birds all around that place, right? They're everywhere, and we got up there. We had a good idea where they were roosting. We didn't roost them the night before, but we had a pretty good, you know, pin on where they were. And, you know, we kind of make it up this little mountain or hill, whatever you want to call it, on this like old logging road. And, you know, we get there. I think we did an owl hoot or something like that, or gave them a little like a soft yelp or something. And I mean, we had four toms just firing off basically all around us. And so we pretty much sat down where we were, and we were probably a little late to the game, because right when we sat down, they started flying down.
Okay.
And I think they picked us off when we were trying to sit down up in the tree, because we didn't realize how close we actually were to that roost, the one roost tree, until they gobbled at us. And they were probably 70 yards, or at least that one was probably 70 yards from us. And when he flew down, I think he picked us out. But they were all around us. We just couldn't make it happen, unfortunately.
I tell everybody most of the time with turkeys, if you think they can see you, they already saw you.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, like I said, we got up to this logging road, and we hit like an intersection where, you know, the one logging road's coming up the mountain, and then kind of once you get on top of the ridge, there's a logging road that runs that ridge. And so we kind of took a left onto that logging road to walk the ridge top, basically. And, you know, we walked it, you know, 50 yards probably, gave an owl hoot or something like that, and they fired off, and then we were like, oh, they are very close now. And when we were getting set up and everything, I think they picked us off. And because he gobbled at us once he got down one or two times. But it sounded like he was making kind of a big loop, and we just ended up losing him.
That's crazy. All right, Grant, what kind of mount you doing on this thing? Obviously Lanier's not giving you an option, right? He's told you got to get a full body mount on it, but what's this mount going to look like? Is it going to, are you going to try to put it in a position that, you know, that you first saw it, or pictures you have of it, like on a trail camera, or what kind of mount are you looking at here?
This kind of, his guy's got a picture of it, but it's just kind of like a standing up mount. The spurs is what made the bird what he is, and I don't want to take away from that. So he ain't going to be blown up or nothing like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's right? You almost have to take some of those other pieces back so that the spurs are the main focus of it. I feel that. Yeah. I feel that. Okay. And what's it been like, you know, kind of getting all this attention, right? From kind of following Lanier's tactics of, you know, just keep it to yourself, no social media, to, you know, ending up in a couple magazines and having some random dude from Atlanta area call you to jump on a podcast to talk about this bird. How's that been for you?
I mean, it's been all right. I mean, people around here ask me about it. You know, I give a lot of credit to Lanier. I mean, honestly, if it weren't for him, I would never got on that bird.
He's eating it up. His girlfriend said that she's already tired of it.
How many times has this girlfriend heard this story?
Thousands.
I mean,
we went and ate lunch at a local chicken restaurant here we got in town. We went and ate lunch, and I texted Nair. I said, hey, man, I said, you know, I'm here and ate lunch with us. He said, yeah, I'm on my lunch break. So he came up there, and we ate lunch, and she was there. And he brought it up, asked somebody across, somebody asked about it. We got to talking about it. She just put her head down. We got done talking. She said, I can't fit y'all's head in a 5-gallon bucket cap.
I'll tell you what, though. That's the only thing better might have been I don't know. I think sometimes when you get some of those things on film and you can relive, like when you hear that bird gobble, like it's always going to be in your memory, but when you can hear that bird gobble and it puts you back in that same place, just for you, right? Not to put on YouTube or anywhere else, but just to have for you, and to show your girlfriend 15 more times the rest of the week, you know, like I'm sure she needs to hear the story at least 8 more times.
The morning before we went and hunted that bird, I tried to go roost him, and I stayed out there probably 30 minutes, or maybe a little longer, but I couldn't get him to gobble back or nothing. I mean, I waited just to see. I hit a hoot owl call, nothing. It was tough, but he talked sweet to him, that's for sure.
Well, I think that's the benefit, right? Of having friends and people that are good at it that want to share. It's we've talked about this before, Holden, right? But it's interesting. It seems like people that are turkey hunters or during turkey hunting, they're more willing to share that experience and take somebody out. And you know, Lanier, you probably got as much from getting Grant on his first bird, regardless of how many spurs it had, right? But it seems like turkey hunting it's more about that relationship, that camaraderie, that woodsmanship, versus people in the whitetail woods get super selfish. Big bucks make people do stupid things, you know?
Oh yeah, definitely.
That's why we got to keep the locations kind of fly around here.
On the DL.
Yeah, it wasn't actually a blueberry failed. It was probably something crazy. I think like we respect that. We get it. Wasn't a blueberry field. It wasn't a swamp. It was just some. Wasn't even in Georgia, right? We'll edit all that out.
I told him we need to take his dad's blueberries. They're picking now. You know, they're sackets.
Mm-hmm.
I said, all we got to do is freeze dry these thing. Tell them it was the antioxidants in these blueberries that caused the double spur.
Yeah.
You got a brand new feed company
package
then.
Package that up and sell it. Yeah, package that up and sell it. That could work.
Turkeys.
That could work. People buy dumber things, right? Oh man. Well, that's awesome. Well, Grant, I don't know if you want to share this or not, but if people want to see more pictures of this bird, where can they find you at? If you don't want to release any of your social media stuff, you don't have to do that either, but it's up to you.
The pictures are on my Instagram. It's grant.tucker3. I got them posted there.
Okay. And we'll tag this article from the Georgia Outdoor News and all
for
that
sure.
too. So that's just a cool story. It's a super cool bird. You're going to have to send us some pictures once you get the mount back. I'm sure it's going to be a bit.
Yeah, you have a spot for it?
Yeah, probably in the middle of the living room.
that's where it's got to be.
That's been my answer lately too. We like Mike said, we went to Africa last year and we haven't got our taxidermy back yet, but my fiance and I have had multiple conversations on, you know, where some of this stuff is going to go. And I think the only logical option and the only room that will really fit in our house is the living room. But no, I don't know. We got to get that buyer first.
Or you could be like this guy and have your own room for all your mounts and everything else.
Well, I think that's why I built this studio, mostly just so I had a place to put the pheasant and the quail and the couple whitetails and you know, all the different stuff, so it's not spread throughout the house. And this way, it's my wife doesn't really care where it goes, you know.
What about y'all's trip to Africa? That's something that I've never really had a desire to do, but everybody I tell that, like, man, you would love it if you ever done it.
It was the coolest thing ever. I mean, it was the coolest experience of my life by far.
It was never even on my list. And then when I had an opportunity to talk to somebody that had been, it's just one of those, it's hard to even explain.
Yeah, it really is hard to put that experience into words because it was just so incredible.
There's something so primitive about it, and there's so many species, and these are huge, just massive, massive properties. To know that there's, you know, lions on the property, that there's, you know,
Cape Buffalo.
We were within 20 yards of Cape Buffalo at one point. It was just really cool to see some of these huge animals. Holden and I did it mostly with our bows the whole time, and you know, I shot a really nice kudu at, you know, what, 28 yards. We both shot sables that are, they call it Roland Ward, but that's kind of like the Booner level. So we both shot incredible sables over there. But the whole experience that when you're over there, the habitat's just so much different. The hunting kind of culture is a bit different as well. And you think that hunting and license sales here in the U.S. drive conservation, it's 20 times in Africa, because without hunting, these animals have no purpose. It's different over there, right? The landowners technically actually own animals, whereas here it's a resource that we all share. But there's certain areas, I think it was like Kenya, they outlawed hunting. Yeah. They outlawed hunting.
It was like 70% of the animals were killed.
Within 20 years, most of these animals were just gone off the landscape because they serve no purpose anymore. So hunting over there has a lot more from a conservation perspective. But man, it was awesome. We saw a lot of different animals. Like, you know how you see squirrels or raccoons around here? That's what those little vervet monkeys are like. They're jumping in the vehicles, taking the peanut brittle out of the car. Like, it's insane.
If you're in like a blind or something, they'll come right up into the windows and pop their head in and look at you. And I mean, they're everywhere. It's crazy.
And I'll tell you what, it's way less expensive than whatever you think it is. You can go over there for less than what it would cost you to go out west on a guided elk hunt. And you can shoot. Yeah. You can spend 7 days in South Africa, leave with 4 or 5 animals, have a great experience, and again, for less than what it costs you to go on a guided elk hunt. So I told my wife it was a once in a lifetime thing, Lanier, and now we're scheduling another trip.
You're belly crawling now.
Yeah, and it's I'll tell you what, it's on. You can see it on YouTube or on. Oh gosh, what's it on?
Carbon
TV. Because the group that we were with, they are one of the number one hunting shows out of South Africa. It's called the Hunt Tech Pro. And if you're interested, their service is great. Great. I mean, I consider them both friends now. They've come here to hunt, but they're a great group of people, really trustworthy, and they know what they're doing. So if you want to learn more about it, we got the hookup. We can definitely tell you about it.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that anyone that really wants to experience different types of hunting, it's absolutely worth at least going once, at least look into it. Right. And I say once, you go once.
Yeah, you go once.
I haven't talked to anybody that said they were going to go once that actually just went once.
I mean, I don't know anybody who has only been once besides us.
Because once you go once, it's addicting.
Yeah.
It's addicting. So
it is neat to hunt places like this. Sometimes we get in our box. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we forget what's outside that box. Like, I've been down to Mexico turkey hunting, and it was it was great. It was great. You know, people, I wouldn't go to Mexico. We flew in to a little small town and hunted goulds there. And I'd love to go. Actually, we were scheduled to go back in 20 when COVID hit. And we just haven't not, we already had our deposit paid and everything. But that was a really cool turkey hunting experience, you know, seeing the countryside there. It was almost like they're 40 years behind us, you know, where I was in Mexico.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I think the same thing about, one of my first ever, like, out of states, non, like, you know, family property whitetail hunt. My father-in-law and my brother-in-law and I went up to Quebec, like, you know, 30-hour drive north of Michigan, last 200 miles around a dirt road to hunt caribou. And it was, you know, negative 20-some degrees Fahrenheit.
I still can't believe you did that.
It almost looked like a desert, but it was all white because you're hunting these huge migrations on these massive lakes. And just the whole experience and different area and different habitat. And you just learn so much more that when you get put in that environment that it's just really cool. So I agree with you there for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, Lanier, what about you? You said you don't have any social media, so I guess if people want to find you, they can look you up in the yellow pages, right?
Yeah, look in the bushes, unless you want to buy insurance.
Okay. All right. If anybody needs insurance, give us a call. We'll connect you with Lanier. But Holden, what other questions do you have for these guys? It's just, you know, it's a shorter episode, but I think it's just a cool story.
Dude, I mean, the story is awesome. I mean, I think it's great. It's such a cool bird. I'm super jealous because I haven't killed a turkey yet this year. So you've not only one upped me, you've two upped me, I guess, with the double spurs.
He double spurred you.
Yeah.
All right. So that's the first turkey. George has got more than one tag here, Grant. Are you still going back out? Are you going back out on the weekends, or what are you doing?
Whenever he can get time, he's a busy man.
Okay, so he's your main guy. He's your guide now, huh?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Might as well take advantage of it while he's offering.
That's fair. There is something to be said for going out and failing on your own. I've got my fair share of that, and it sounds like you struggle with it. But I think a good mix of finding someone that you can learn from and can kind of mentor you, but also struggle busting a little bit on your own. So.
Well, I mean, it's just like what you said, Grant said, man, like, how do you know, what makes you think this way? Because I've been beat that way. It wasn't, I didn't wake up and just kill birds. I had a cousin, one of my first cousins that really got me started, and it was a good turkey hunter. Learned from him and went on my own, and I got beat. But, you learn, every time you get beat, it's like, check that.
Yeah, it's another thing that you hold up your sleeve, right? Another trick that you kind of have to play defense against them.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Well, we appreciate you guys both coming on. We'll stay online here. We'll have a few follow-up things, but any last words for the listeners here?
Yeah, if Holden, this is for Holden. If you'll drop me a pin on that rooster, I'll split the breast with you.
I mean, it might be the only way we can kill him, so I might have to.
Yeah. I ain't going to be able to help you.
Before you go, his wife has got Facebook, and she commented on my post. And, I was just telling her thanks to him. He talks sweet to him or whatever. And she said, yeah, he likes talking to them turkeys more than he likes to talk to me. I told him about it. He said, yeah, because she don't come strutting. She just gobbles a little bit.
That is incredible. You'll have to make sure you send her this link so she can hear that part of it for the podcast. Yeah. Sometimes it's because they talk back to you. They talk back to you in a good way, not how.
Yeah.
I should stop. Yeah, I should stop.
You're gonna dig yourself a hole.
Oh man. Well, boys, we appreciate it. This was cool. We'll share the post for the article on here as well. You guys have already sent a bunch of pictures, so that's awesome. And excited to see what the next bird that you kill, whether it's a double spurred or you're probably going to get something crazy, right? With the genetics down there on this blueberry farm, the new products that you guys will be selling, creating all these genetic mutations. But we appreciate it, and hey, we'll catch everybody on the next one.